willing to sacrifice our love. You never take advice. Someday you'll pay the price. I know. I've seen it before. It happens all the time. You're closing the door. You leave the world behind. You're digging for gold. You're throwing away.
I'm Sarah Beck for the U.S. Department of Agriculture with the question, just how good is good? Good, the USDA's third quality grade for meat, is not as juicy and flavorful as the higher grades, prime and choice. But good is somewhat more lean, acceptably tender, and it's usually less expensive. You should cook most good grade meat with moist heat. For more information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is the big picture.
It is indeed.
Derek Gary and Chase Blaine with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. Big news coming out of Israel.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes. I have to enter this.
Say, what are you logging this in your blog? I'm just to be like, oh my God, I'm talking about Israel right now.
Logging this in the thing that I have to fill out so the FCC likes us.
Hi, FCC. We love you so much. You're not annoying at all.
This is a big story. This is a potentially world-altering story that came out of Israel this week from the Jerusalem Post.
Oh, yes. I did see this.
A small team of Israeli scientists think they might have found the first complete cure for cancer.
Woo, 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 woo.
Say that again. A small team of Israeli scientists think they might have found the first complete cure for cancer. Quote, "We believe we will offer in a year's time a complete cure for cancer," said Dan Arador of a new treatment being developed by his company, Accelerated Evolution Biotechnologies Limited, AEBI, which was founded in 2000 in the iTech Incubator in Wiseman Science Park. AEBI delivered the SOAP platform, that's capital S, lowercase o, capital A, capital P, which provides functional leads to very difficult targets. Now, a lot of this gets very technical. This is very technical. So I will walk you through it. Let me give you a few more highlights from this. "It sounds fantastical," says the Jerusalem Post, "especially considering that an estimated 18.1 million new cancer cases are diagnosed worldwide each year, according to reports by the International Agency for Research on Cancer. Further, every sixth death in the world is due to cancer, making it the second leading cause of death, second only to cardiovascular disease." Arador, chairman of the board of AEBI, and CEO Dr. Ilan Morad say their treatment, which they call Mutato, multi-target toxin, is essentially on the scale of a cancer antibiotic, a disruption technology of the highest order. So this kind of treatment exists right now. There is a version of this that exists. And places like the Termeer Center at Mass General, Dana-Farber here in Boston, use these kinds of and develop these kinds of targeted therapies. And basically what a targeted therapy is it is a substance that you put into the body that goes in and it finds cancer cells and it says, "You're a cancer cell. I am going to destroy you." Mm-hmm. And it destroys these things on the cellular level. And part of the way that they target it is they do a genetic profile on your specific type of cancer.
Well, it's basically genome mapping.
Yes. They do a genetic profile on your specific type of cancer, and then they modify their therapy so that it will work specifically with your cancer. The cure rates have been very good in some cases. Not at all, but in some cases. Now, what the folks in Israel have done is instead of attacking cancer at the cellular level, they're actually going a step further on this, and they're going after the peptides.
I was going to say, basically, it's like when people thought the atom was the smallest thing,
right,
and then we're like, wait, there's electrons and neutrons and protons inside there.
Exactly. And what Mutato does is it uses peptides to get into the cells and basically break them down at the protein level. Mm. All cells, ultimately all DNA, is made out of proteins.
Yeah.
So these peptides go in.
This is taking me so back to high school biology and anatomy. I love it.
These peptides go in and they destroy the proteins that make the cancer cells. Yeah. And that kills the cells. One of the advantages of this treatment is that cancer cells will mutate like crazy. Mm-hmm. And so you develop a treatment for them, and they're like, "Ah, I'm smarter than you. I'm a cancer cell." And it changes, and then you have to change the treatment. Another thing that cancer cells will do is they'll build shields around themselves that basically keep those targeted
kills me
treatments.
How smart cancer cells
oh,
are.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Cancer cell is like, no. I am in charge here. I am in charge. You cannot defeat me.
Oh, you think you bad? We show you who bad.
The peptides solve both of those problems. Because the cancer cell may be able to mutate its form so that the larger molecules can't lock onto it. Mm-hmm. But the proteins that the peptides attack cannot. And these peptides can also get past any sort of a defensive barrier that the cancer cell puts up. They've said in their trials so far, they haven't started human trials yet, but they're working on it. They've tested on mice who have been bred to have human cancer cells to express them.
Poor mice.
Yeah. But what they've found,
they will have not died in vain, or hopefully they will live in awesomeness.
The mice aren't actually dying. The mice are surviving. And there is zero effect on normal cells.
I've read about this as well. There is a bit of backlash from the rest of the medical community having some skepticism about it. Dr. Darren Sanders, for example, he's a cancer biologist at the University of New South Wales in Australia. He is the most widespread criticism of this, where he said they were selling unicorns. His entire quote was, "Please stop boosting the Israeli biotech claiming a cancer cure within a year. I can find very little published data, and the in vitro data on their website is underwhelming at best. They're selling unicorns." And there's many quotes from various cancer biologists and doctors around the world. But that being said,
that's how science works, by the way.
I was just going to say, every great idea, every great advancement in science, when the first person mentioned it, the rest of the scientific community said, "This dude's crazy." Like, if you think of everything, splitting the atom, that's an example I just brought up. Going back even further, the world being round instead of flat. Every person who introduced the idea first, the existence of gravity, every person who introduced the idea first, every other scientist in the world was like, "This dude's nuts. This is bull."
Yeah.
Like, and that's the thing is, when I first read this, I was like, okay, maybe this Israeli study is complete nonsense. But then I thought about all these other examples. My brain started going back through all of the things that I've studied over the years. And because our loyal listeners know, I thought for a while about being a doctor and then was like, ew, over a decade of school? No.
Yeah.
But I mean, I do love science and I love the human body. And
it's a lofty claim. And it's the kind of lofty claim that other doctors and scientists are immediately going to jump on and say,
and be like, no,
wait a minute. No.
Well, especially
you're way ahead of yourself here. We understand you're excited. You have to come. You have to back down. Show us some clinical trials, and then we can talk about this.
Well, I wouldn't say. Well, and especially somebody who that's why I really liked this example of Dr. Saunders, because he's a cancer biologist, which means that he's not like a doctor who's doing a clinical trial on the side. This is all he does.
Yeah.
All day.
This is all these guys do too.
Yeah. Like, you know. But for him, it kind of reminded me of, I know I always do movie parallels, but they are sometimes helpful. It reminded me of in Good Will Hunting, there is a part where there's this theorem that, Professor Longo, the main professor that discovers Will, who he's taken like a decade, he still can't prove it, and Will does it in like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And his assistant professor goes, like, you can see that he's like devastated that it was so easy for this uneducated kid or seemingly uneducated kid. And his assistant professor's like, "You're a very brilliant man," like trying to like placate him. And I feel like the reactions, and I'm not saying it could turn out that this ends up with nothing. It could turn out that this is a bust. But like I said, every great scientific advancement, like you think when, who was it? Fleming, who discovered penicillin from bread molds. Was it Fleming?
No, he discovered James Bond. Jonas Salk. Jonas Salk is the polio vaccine. It was Mendel. Or one of those. Oh, maybe it was Fleming.
Hang on. Penicillin.
We need an answer now because we got to keep moving.
I know, but I really want to find it out. History. Alexander Fleming. I was right. He was a Scottish physician and he discovered it from molds on bread. And everybody was like, why are you giving people bread molds to get rid of their infections? And then
because it works.
I can't do a Scottish accent, but you know, things like that, like I just knocked on wood, if you could hear that over the airwaves, I really hope this is true and that this does turn out to be another let's feed people bread mold situation.
Understand on one level what this is. Okay, this, they make this announcement because they want the monies. That's why they're coming out and saying this. They are looking for people to give them the monies to continue the research, and they are probably also trying to get some fast track.
Yeah, people being like, prove it.
Clinical trial approval.
Yeah.
For all other doctors who are also trying to get the monies for their research, they are going to be like, wait a minute, don't send your monies to those guys because those guys don't have anything real to back up what they're saying.
Send me some.
Send me the monies because I have all this data over here. And the investors are sitting there and they're like, can't I just give the monies to everybody? So that's part of what this announcement is about. But if you are even remotely familiar with the science that goes into cancer treatment these days, you know that what is coming out of this group, at least on paper, is sound. On paper, yeah, this should work.
I was going to say, just as someone, if you know general science...
Will it actually work? We'll see.
But if you know, so if you're someone who knows general biology and cellular structure, everything when I read this study, just from, you know, like I took AP bio and AP anatomy and I have a photograph of memory and all that, but like all of it, I'm reading it and being like, yep, all of this adds up. Like, on paper, all of this makes absolute sense.
By the way, if we cure all cancer, everybody gets a gun.
We need some form of population control.
Actually, you know what? We're going to have sex robots, so it doesn't matter. We're just going to have fewer people as time goes by.
Oh, no, I plan to just, we're going to dig a giant cave and keep all the men under there unless we need them for procreation or fun.
You're not going to have to worry about the men because we're going to be home with our sex robots.
No, that's true.
I am team sex robot.
Oh, shut up. Well, so much excitement in sports. The Super Bowl is Sunday, but Hoorah! There is even more exciting news for New England football fans that broke today. So everyone who is a big Patriots fan, so you know everyone in New England, knows that Tom Brady turns 42 in August.
Yes.
And the 2019 season is the final year of his contract, but according to ESPN, owner Robert Kraft indicated today that he would have zero reservations extending the pact as Brady attempts to achieve his goal of playing until he's 45. And there have been multiple quotes pointing towards this. Of course, I don't have any listed, but he basically, they all surmise themselves to say, why would I stop a good thing? And I do think, I mean, you watch Tom Brady play, and even the end of the ALCS championship a week and a half ago, you're watching him. Wait, did I just say the baseball version of it?
Maybe.
I do that sometimes. AFC championship, darn it. AFC championship.
I was gonna let that go. You called it up. You called yourself up.
You know I'm baseball more than football, though I do love football now. Thank you, Chris Dimitrakopoulos. You turned me on to it. And that's what was weird about watching the AFC is I'm watching it with my mom. And I was like, yeah, you know, I just like it for like the fanfare and all of that. But then she keeps being like, why is he doing that? Why is he doing that? And I find myself explaining all these things to her that I didn't even know were in my brain. Like, well, that's why he's challenging this, because this looks like he didn't fully have it in his hands. And this, it may have touched the ground before he. And I'm sitting there being like, I understand all of this. I had no idea.
Yeah.
But even at the end of the game, you see him like jump into somebody's arms and you're like, that dude's 20. Like he does not have the body of a 42-year-old.
We'll see. I mean, if I'm the New England Patriots and this guy wants to keep playing for 3 years, all right, we'll throw him a 3-year contract.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I was going to say. Like even just a 1-year contract each year and seeing how it goes from there to there to there to there.
By the way, if you like former Patriots, the first person that the Indianapolis Colts re-signed was Adam Vinatieri, who is coming back for another year on a $3.78 million contract, I believe, just to kick field goals. I mean, I
was going to say, I was always like, I wish he was on the field.
You have to realize
I was in high school when it was Vinatieri season.
I have an autographed Adam Vinatieri photo in my office.
Oh my God, stop it.
Adam Vinatieri has all the records. I don't know why he's coming back, but he wants to come back. And it's like, awesome. I will take another year of Vinatieri.
I will take another year of
Vinatieri. But if you're, look, if you're the Patriots, all right, you always get into this question about what do I do with my aging quarterback? Because sooner or later, they have all hit the wall. And when they hit the wall, they hit the wall hard. We remember Brett Favre's last season and how bad that was. We remember Peyton Manning's last season. Did he win a Super Bowl? Yes. Did Peyton Manning win that Super Bowl? No. The defense won that Super Bowl. We all know it because Peyton Manning was a husk of what he had once been, to use the kind of corn analogy that will play well in the part of the country he's from. sooner or later, time catches up to you. It hasn't caught up to Brady yet. Now, here's my take on all this. Give him the money, but for God's sake, get a backup quarterback. Get somebody in there who can step in. Because I don't think Brady's abilities on the field are going to decline. I think what's going to happen is he's going to break a leg or he's going to break an arm, and it's going to take a whole season to heal because the guy's 41 years old. That's one of the things that happens. You don't heal as fast as you get older.
Oh, trust me, I know.
And there were stories written about...
I turned 30 and was suddenly like, nope, it's going to be a month instead of a week.
I remember reading this one story about Peyton Manning during his final season. They were describing him after the game. And the guy is so banged up and so bruised and so cut up and battered that he can't even take his pads off. Somebody has to help him get out of his uniform. You can put him out on the field and he can run around and he can play for those 3 hours. But the rest of the week, he's just useless. And that's eventually going to happen to Brady. Because it happens to everybody. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe the not eating strawberries is working out for the guy. did you, by the way.
Strawberries are so good, though.
Before I get into my sports story, did you hear about this guy down in Pittsburgh?
You're going to have to be more specific.
Pittsburgh CBS affiliate KDKA. Issued a statement saying, while fans are entitled to have personal opinions, we have a journalistic responsibility to provide unbiased reporting. The graphic that appeared Monday violated our news standards. The individual who created the graphic no longer works for KDKA-TV. This was in response to somebody on the staff putting up a graphic during a Tom Brady they had footage of Tom Brady at the rally before they left. And the graphic said, Tom Brady. And underneath it said, known cheater. I think that's hilarious. And I think if you were firing a guy for that, you should be fired. Let people have some fun.
Yeah. First Amendment, baby.
Can I tell you something? With Covington Catholic going on and everything else that these news agencies get wrong... Putting known cheater under Tom Brady's name is a pretty minor offense.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I would let that slide.
Yeah. Let me find this link here. This is from The Guardian, always a trustworthy news source. But anyway, as the Super Bowl approaches, is high school football dying a slow death is the question. For many decades, says The Guardian, high school football has been a feel-good American institution. The sport provides pride and entertainment in small towns and big cities alike, inspires films like Varsity Blues and Friday Night Lights, and produces the next generation of stars in college football and the NFL. Yet as fans prepare to gorge on beer and guacamole while watching the New England Patriots take on the Los Angeles Rams in Super Bowl 53 on Sunday, the sport is eroding at its roots. According to the National Federation of State High School Associations, high school football participation in the United States is down 6.1% over the last decade, falling from 1.14 million players in 2008 to 1.07 in 2017. That decline has occurred even as overall high school sports participation has increased by 5.9% over the same span. In addition, youth tackle football, a feeder system for high schools, has seen a 17.4% participation drop among children ages 6 to 12 over the past 5 years, according to the Sports and Fitness Industry Association. Now, this is not universal. There are parts of the country that are Mississippi and Texas and Kentucky.
I knew exactly what states you were going to name.
Where everybody is still playing football like crazy. This again is The Guardian. It had dropped in 40 states, sometimes by surprisingly large margins. 9.5% in California, 11.6% in New Jersey, 21.6% in Michigan, 23% in Ohio, and 55% in Vermont. Michigan and Ohio losing more than 20%.
That's a big deal. Those are big football states.
Those are huge football states. Yeah. College football rules in both of those states.
Oh, yeah. To the point where, like, I've told you the story about my Michigan sweatshirt when I didn't know the connotation. And people got really mad at me.
And this is where this gets really interesting, because if you've got 20% fewer kids playing youth football, eventually that's going to trickle up into the high school system. And already there are middle schools that just can't field a football team, mm-hmm. and high schools that can't field a varsity football team.
Yeah. Putting who would be JV on varsity.
Well, they're going down to JV. They're not playing varsity at all.
Oh my God.
In one community that they looked at. In other communities, several schools in the same area are joining together. And, you know, you got eight football players.
Yeah, we're a regional team now.
Everybody come on in.
Yeah.
But the thing about this is twofold. Number one, you've got fewer players, and you're going to see this trickle up. Mm-hmm. You're going to see this trickle up into the high school level, and then you're going to see it trickle up into the college level, and you're going to see that happen over the next 8 years. The other thing that you're going to see eventually is a drop in quality in who gets on the field. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see a drop in quality in the NFL. Because if you have to take whoever you can get to put a team together, then you're not creating a system where you can be merit-oriented. You're not creating a system where your superstars are allowed to shine and the best of the best sort of claw their way up to the top through the high school and college system to get to the NFL.
To get to the big show. I don't know if they call it that in football, but
they do. You're gonna get to a point where it's like we just need warm bodies. Who can do what out here?
Yeah, like can you maybe knock somebody over possibly?
Yeah, and that's bad news for the NFL. And by the way, what does this go back to? Concussions.
This all goes back to CTE. It has to be noted. That's exactly what I was about to say. It has to be noted the correlation between this happening, like you said, this is all in the last 5 years, and the prevalence of football players dying from concussions, football players reporting deficits as a result of the many concussions that they've gotten. People like Gronkowski, he's a couple years younger than me. There are many players that have played well into their 30s, considering retiring because he doesn't want to end up that way. I mean, he's already a doof, but like a lovable, smart one. Yeah. Like, he doesn't want to be a doof. And this used to be something that just nobody talked about. I mean,
we didn't know 10 years ago.
Well, you think about the movie... Varsity, I keep making movie references. I'm sorry, I'm in a movie mood. But the movie Varsity Blues, that's a really big theme in that. And that came out when I was in high school. So that means in like the late 1990s, early 2000s, where how the quarterback gets injured is the guy that's supposed to be blocking for him has had too many concussions, and the coach still tells him to go out and play, and he just passes out in the middle of the field. And that's something that was perhaps the first time that I'd ever heard of. Like
that's
that
the thing
was,
that happens.
And but everyone thought at the time, we're talking almost 20 years ago. But at the time, this was something that everyone's like, oh, that's just a plot point in a dramatic teen movie.
No, it's not.
It's not. It's very, very real. But it isn't until, like you said, in the last like 5 years or so that people are actually paying attention to this and thinking, like, I mean, I get a concussion playing soccer. And there's no contact, or at least there's not supposed to be any contact in soccer. The reason I got a concussion is because I was a goalie and a girl kicked me in the head when I was on the ball.
Yeah.
She got a technical foul, by the way. It makes sense that I wouldn't be surprised if there's a drop down in kids who play hockey as well.
Hockey doesn't seem to be getting hit quite as much by this. But
with football, it is you put your head into it, literally. Yeah. Like your head is what is heading for the other team.
The kids who play football are almost inevitably multi-sport athletes in high school and increasingly in college. They don't just play football. They play football and baseball. They play football and basketball. Mm-hmm. So they get into college and they've got a choice. You can specialize and you can pick one, or if you're good enough, you can play both. You take a guy
depending on if they're, I was going to say, if it's football and baseball, you're different seasons, so it doesn't matter.
You take a guy like Pat Mahomes, okay? Patrick Mahomes is an excellent baseball player as well, and was drafted for baseball as well as football. Made the choice to go to the NFL and is doing amazing things in the NFL and is a generational talent. But what we may see in a couple of years is a kid like Pat Mahomes, who is a generational talent, sitting there and saying, I don't want my brain turning to mush. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go play baseball. I'm going to go play basketball. I'm going to go play soccer.
That's what I was going to say. Actually, my boyfriend in college, one of them, that made me sound ridiculous, but my most serious boyfriend in college, he was the three-season athlete when he was in high school. And the coach actually said to him, like, he was best at baseball, but he really wanted to still play football as well. And he said, if you want to play football, you're not playing baseball, because I'm not having you get a concussion or get really injured and not be able to, because he was a pitcher.
Yeah.
It's like, and not have you be able to pitch. And he was like, all right, fine, I'll play baseball, because that way I know the most I'm getting injured is a line drive.
Yeah.
And that, or throwing my shoulder out, which probably won't happen to a 19-year-old.
Crack your skull with a line drive. I mean, that'd give you a concussion, too.
Yeah, but he can, you can duck out of the way of a line drive.
Sometimes.
If you're a good enough baseball player, you can put your glove in front of it.
But we've seen plenty of guys get cracked in the head with line drives. And
that's true, but it's less likely than getting cracked in the head with another human being's head.
Yeah, it's more, yes, but the injury tends to be more devastating. The point is, all sports are dangerous.
I mean, true, but it's a matter of weighing the likelihood of danger in relation to what you're doing and the longevity of how long you can do it if you do get injured.
You will start to see this impact college football this year.
I'm very interested to see how this plays out. This is a very interesting story.
You will see this start to impact the NFL in 4 years, because the thing about it is, in college football, The overall quality of a college football game is highly variable anyway, because colleges can get at best like one or two like superstar players. So there tends to be wild differences in quality of college football teams from game to game and from season to season. It's not going to show up there as quickly as it is going to show up in the combine, when 4 years from now, maybe we're looking at, 40-yard dash speeds are coming down. These guys don't jump quite as high as they used to. These guys don't have the hands that they used to. And there still will be those one or two built for football generational talents. But you're going to get to a point in the NFL where you have basically what happened in basketball in the 1990s, where you get somebody like Michael Jordan, who is so far above and beyond what every other team in the league has.
No, he was essentially a superhero.
That it just dominates the sport.
Yeah.
And fans are going to start walking away in droves when that happens. The NFL has got to fix this. And the NFL is not moving quickly enough to fix this. The NFL is still waving their arms around saying, hey, look over there. And they're not going to get away with it.
Yeah.
This is a big issue. And it's something to keep an eye on. And as I said, 4 years from now, because what we're getting into now is the first generation of kids who were taught heads-up football in college. And they're coming in as freshmen, and they're coming in as sophomores. They're going to be draft eligible in a few years. And you're going to get the combination of that and the lower participation rates. 4 years from now, I expect we're going to start to see that quality at the combine decline.
Yeah.
And maybe it has to go really low before the NFL does something. I hope it doesn't. You know, there is only so much you can do to make football safer.
Yeah, because it is, in and of itself, it's a barbaric sport.
But the NFL has got to do something.
Yeah.
They have to do something. You want to go back to that that Saints-Rams game, okay, where obvious helmet-to-helmet pass interference doesn't get called, and we got guys banging heads out on the field on a pass play. Parents, look at that play.
Yeah, I remember that, actually.
That play is the one thing that, other than the Super Bowl...
I'm getting chills thinking about it.
Other than the Super Bowl, that play is what everyone is going to remember in the postseason, okay? We'll remember something magical that happens on Sunday, but that Saints-Rams play... which shows professional football at its worst, is what everyone is going to remember in the postseason. And that's what parents are going to see when their kid's like, I want to play football. No.
Well, and the great struggle of it, too, is, I mean, if you look back to when football was first, or I'm sorry, American football was first conceived, they wore nothing. They wore like cute little padded helmets and absolutely no gear underneath. And the great struggle of that is, how do we protect them adequately while still giving them the range of motion to play the game properly?
Right.
Like that's the big issue involved in this, is because like you said, hockey's less of an issue. The reason being that hockey, you can pad the heck out of them way more than you can pad the heck out of a football player. As long as they can skate properly and move their arm side to side, they're pretty good.
They're also animals and, you know, not too bright to begin with. So, you know, it's football players.
So no great loss there.
Yeah.
Well, it's whenever people say that football players aren't bright, I always say like, hey, ready? I'm going to teach you 30 plays. I want you to memorize them in an hour.
Yeah.
A lot of them are pretty bright.
That's the thing. They're smart. And they're smart enough. They're smart enough to see the dangers.
Yeah.
And even some of the pros are walking away from this. So.
Speaking of not being bright, in entertainment news, Ariana Grande has had a bit of a tattoo snafu. I laughed for a good 5 minutes when I read this. Every news source in the entertainment industry is saying it, but Entertainment Tonight was wonderfully the first to report that the 25-year-old pop star got a tattoo in celebration of her new hit single, Seven Rings, but it seems she had a slight misstep as to the spelling. Using Japanese kanji character symbols, Grande got what she thought was the message of seven rings inked on her palm, which, by the way, I have like that on my foot, like the same area. It's like one of the most painful tattoos to get. But then...
Well, she got it on the palm of her hand.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I have it on like the palm of my foot. It hurts a lot, is what I'm saying. But fans on Twitter, after she posted it to Instagram, were very quick to note that the way the tattoo was spelled actually translates to shichirin, which means a Japanese-style small barbecue grill.
Nice.
Grande, she originally posted the photo on Instagram, writing, "This felt super good, JK. Everyone thinks this is a fake hand, but it is indeed my hand." She later deleted the image as well as her tweet responding to one fan calling out the misspelling. And... the tweet that she had put out responding was like, "It was so painful. I don't think I could have stood another symbol. Plus, I love Chinese barbecues." But I think she's at least smart enough to realize that she should just try to hide the fact that she's that much of a moron.
I will give Ariana Grande credit for owning it and laughing it off and being like, okay, yeah, you got me.
That's like, well, I mean, and that's...
Here's a better idea, and this extends to all millennials. Don't get the tattoo in the first place. Don't get the tattoo.
Well, particularly in a language that you don't know.
Right.
Like, Ariana Grande is, I mean, she's kind of a cultural mutt, but I imagine she doesn't speak Japanese.
No.
At least not, she can't read Japanese. She was just like, oh, this will be cool to get in Japanese.
Yeah, somebody was like, oh, this is your thing in Japanese. And she's like, oh, that's a good idea.
But
let's
it's just
that.
Like, I knew an Irish girl who got what she thought was the Chinese symbol for peace and love. And it turned out to be war and noodles. Yeah. And how she found out was that we were in Quincy, which of course Quincy's changed a lot in the last decade, but this was when we were like 19 and we're at a Chinese restaurant in Quincy, and the woman just looked and go, "Oh, ho, ho, why war and noodles?" And she was like, "What?" She said, "Your tattoo, war and noodles." And she's like, "What?" She kind of like 3 days before, like a block away.
Yeah.
But, well, it's even, I mean, I have a tattoo in Gaelic on my foot, which someone told me was spelled incorrectly. And I was like, no, 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 no. my grandmother told me this was the proper spelling, and then I went and checked and just figured every county has a different dialect from the olden days. It is correct for my county.
To be fair, the person who told you that was a former Celtic teacher from Ireland, so...
No, they were a drunk from Cork.
Well,
I'm sorry, a drunk carpenter from Cork.
Well, from Ireland, who we could assume probably is a bit more up on the Gaelic than
my grandmother from Ireland.
Yes. I don't know. Is she off the boat?
Oh, well, her husband was. Yeah. She was second.
All right. Maybe.
Well, whatever. It's all falling apart anyways because it's on my foot. It'll be gone in a year.
Well, that's the other thing is apparently where she got the tattoo, it's just going to wear off eventually.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, that's the only... It's funny. I used to want to get... Yeah, because they say the bottom of your foot and the palm of your hand, most tattoo artists will not do a tattoo there because they consider themselves, and they are, at least the good ones, are artists, and they don't want their art to disappear.
Right.
Because the skin on your hand and the skin on your foot renew so often.
Yeah.
That it will fade away. The only reason that the tattoo artist that did the tattoos on my feet is because I danced for so long, my arches are really high. So the part that renews itself is on my foot, not as low. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it renews itself because it touches the ground and touches the bottom of your shoes, whereas mine is like an inch higher than most people. So they did it for me. Ha ha, I got to do it.
In the meantime, Ariana Grande, every party you go to, you are the grill master. It says so right in your hand. So I get like, hi, I'm the grill master.
I was going to say, like what I thought, first of all,
flip
I think
them
she...
Flip burgers, Ariana.
I think that she... After, like, I get why she deleted the Instagram. She's just like, I'm sick of people calling me an idiot.
Yeah.
But I think that what she should have done is had her assistant run out and get her a hibachi and then gotten a picture of herself, like, holding a spatula, like, cooking food on it with the tattoo show.
There is a spawn con opportunity here. If you're willing to look at this the right way, Ariana. That's all we're saying.
We all have to be able to laugh at ourselves, boo.
All right.
That was... Small Japanese barbecue grill.
So you got the Japanese
on her hands,
you got
too.
The Japanese equivalent of hibachi written on your
pretty much, yeah.
All right,
wouldn't that just be hibachi? Isn't hibachi a Japanese word?
I hate to end on a story like this, but disturbing new details out in the Jesse Smollett story. Disturbing if you are part of the news media or someone who comments on Twitter. More specifically, from PJ Media, and don't get on me about PJ Media. I'm here because they have the largest amount of details, which I have confirmed through a number of different sources, and I'm not giving you PJ Media's bias on this. This is pretty straight up reporting. The incendiary story of an alleged hate crime attack targeting Empire actor Jussie Smollett immediately went viral yesterday, with media reporting the attackers made racial and anti-gay comments. I give him credit for using the phrase anti-gay, while using President Trump's MAGA slogan during a 2 a.m. assault in downtown Chicago. But conflicting versions of the incident from Smollett himself and details reported by the media being outright contradicted by Chicago police have raised questions about what actually happened. Deborah Heine noted on the PJ Media last night that police had found surveillance video of Smollett, but had not been able to find video of the alleged assailants. The explosive details of the incident were initially broadcast by TMZ. Reliable source. Empire star Jussie Smollett was brutally attacked by two men who beat him up, put his head in a noose, and screamed, "This is MAGA country." The TMZ article...
In Chicago?
The TMZ article now features a FaceTime... In Chicago. A nice part of Chicago. Now features a FaceTime screenshot of Smollett in the hospital, taken by Empire creator Lee Daniels that Fields had initially posted online, but then removed. Chicago police issued this initial statement. Overnight, the Chicago Police Department received a report of a possible racially charged assault and battery involving a cast member of the television show Empire. Given the severity of the allegations, we are taking this investigation very seriously and treating it as a possible hate crime. Detectives are currently working to gather video, identify potential witnesses, and establish an investigative timeline. The victim is fully cooperating with investigators, and we seek anyone with information about this incident to contact yada, yada, yada. The Chicago police issued subsequent statements denying TMZ's claim that Smollett reported the suspects yelling, "This is MAGA country." However, Chicago police later said that Smollett did reveal the detail in a second interview taken after the TMZ story had spread. The Daily Beast, another useless outlet, later reported that a Chicago police spokesman refuted TMZ's claim of the defendants being male and white. The spokesperson stated the gender and race of the alleged assailants were unknown to Smollett because they were wearing ski masks and gloves. So here's the story. Jesse Smollett's walking home. Two people in ski masks and gloves jump him, beat him, yell racist and gayist slurs, tie a rope around his neck, splash bleach on him. He goes to the apartment where he is staying. Apparently his manager is there. His manager calls the police. There's some uncertainty about who called the police. The police get there. He's still wearing the rope around his neck. They tell him, you should go to the hospital and get looked at. He's reluctant to do so. He eventually does. The TMZ story comes up. He's been interviewed by the police a couple of times. The police have pulled every bit of video that they could, that they've been able to get their hands on.
From that, because they say you're on video. If you're walking down a city street, you're on video at least 20 times a day.
Chicago is like surveillance city.
Oh, yeah.
They've got video of him at Subway by himself, and they've got video of him walking back to the apartment. Mm-hmm. They know the exact route he took back to the apartment. What they don't have is video of any individuals matching his description of his attackers. What they don't have is any evidence of the container used to throw bleach on him. What they don't have is video of any suspicious vehicles in the area. That's as of the end of the day today. They have gone through hundreds of hours of video. And what the Chicago police are saying is, we don't have this on tape. We don't have anything that even looks like this could be a thing on tape. So they are now going to pull all the video from buses that were in the area. They're going to pull video from police cars that were in the area.
Yeah, from just anything. They're that could possibly everything. Have caught something in the background even.
All of the usual suspects on Twitter are screaming and yelling about Donald Trump and racism and gay bashing and America's awful and our hearts go out to Jesse Smollett, thereby validating that we learned nothing from Covington Catholic, because this detail from the police raises some serious questions about what actually happened here. When you go to the police and tell them a story, and when you go to a journalist and tell them a story, their default response is to believe you. You know, they're going to listen intently and they're going to say, all right, this is...
Especially
this is,
if you've just been attacked.
This is what happened here. And you're going to recognize that somebody who's just been attacked is probably not going to have all the details. Okay? So the thing about this is MAGA country may or may not be true. But here's what we have. We have another ready-made outrage story, okay, where
It has a bow around it.
Two people are yelling, this is MAGA country, and putting a noose around a young gay black man's neck.
A young, famous gay black man's neck.
This has outrage written all over it. Everybody's going to blow up and lose their minds about this. Now, the police are also going to treat every detail with some level of suspicion. Mm. And at a certain point, things are a little too fantastical.
I would say it's a little too, and I'm not saying that he was not attacked at all. I'm not saying that he definitely wasn't attacked.
I'm not ready to rule that out yet.
I'm not ready. Well, I'm not saying that. Let's put it this way. I'm not saying that something didn't happen, but given the current climate, this is almost, like I said, it is tied up in a bow.
Yeah.
Like the fact that he's gay, the fact that he's black, the fact that he tied in the whole, this is MAGA country, the fact that there is no surveillance video of it actually happening.
It's a little too perfect.
It's a little, coming from the standpoint of somebody who is very into criminology and very into the law and, like, you know, the way that jurisprudence plays out in habeas corpus. That's the word I was looking for. It seems a little... I don't know if I can rock the beyond a reasonable doubt on this one.
I'll tell you the detail about this that makes me... That
would Especially without a suspect.
The detail about this that would make me question it initially is they put a noose around his neck, right? Who's walking around Chicago with a noose?
Yeah, that's very fair.
Who's walking around Chicago with a rope?
Unless they're planning on killing themselves from jumping off the Willis Tower or something.
Where do you even get rope in Chicago? You know, you just...
Yeah, especially in the middle of the night, there aren't hardware stores.
You just have to be out at 2 in the morning with a bottle of bleach and a rope.
It's like you must... Like, in order to have a bottle of bleach and a rope, you must have planned on attacking somebody, this specific person, that night.
This is... now we start to get to some of the truth about this, because he specifically said they yelled racist and gayist slurs at him, okay? How do random... I know he's a high-profile individual, all right? But how do random attackers know that he's gay? How do they know? I'm pretty sure he's not sashaying around the neighborhood.
Well, and especially because there are plenty of people who play gay characters on television programs and aren't actually gay in real life.
Right.
And, like, I knew who this guy was from that he's on the show. I don't know about his personal life. Like, I mean, Sam Waterston and Martin Sheen aren't actually gay in real life, as far as I know, but they play gay very well on Grace and Frankie. Like,
now, what I get from looking at this, if this attack went down the way that Smollett claims it did, is that he was targeted, and he was targeted deliberately by somebody. Mm. All right? He's either got a stalker who's out of control, and that's unacceptable, and maybe they did yell, "This is MAGA country." Or his attacker is known to him, and he's in over his head with somebody. He owes somebody some money. And they put the beat down on him to...
And this was the best way to explain it.
To let him know...
that makes sense.
You're gonna pay up, and he doesn't want that information revealed to the police because that puts him in additional danger. The third possibility is that no one attacked him.
And this was all a publicity stunt.
And that this is right. I don't want to go there. I don't want to say that that's what happened here. But if you're going to look at the set of possibilities here,
it is a possibility.
You can't rule it out.
Yeah.
The least likely scenario is that a couple of people randomly saw him walking down the street and attacked him for being a black gay man. That's not what happened here. So if this is targeted, or if this
is... It
was
knowing exactly who he was and premeditating.
If this is somebody trying to collect a debt, then all these people who are screaming and yelling on social media need to take a big step back and chill out, all right? Figure out what's going on here, because any rational person who looks at these details is going to say, you know what? This doesn't quite add up.
Things that make you go,
And now the Chicago police don't have any surveillance video.
Yeah.
In a rich part of Chicago.
Which would be up the wazoo,
where
covered in cameras.
Every single doorway has a video camera pointing at the street. Now, here's a possibility. People that attacked him knew where the video cameras were. All right? It's very possible. Especially if you're dealing with, you know, loan sharks. Like, they know where the cameras are and aren't.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what's going on here.
But that, again, that calls into proof that it would have been premeditated.
If you
do enough planning to know where the surveillance cameras are and where blind spots are, this isn't a random attack.
This could be a couple of Antifa jerks trying to work up some outrage. Yeah. There's a lot of possibilities here.
I'm very interested to see how this plays out.
And here's the thing. If you go on the internet, if you go on Twitter and you start jumping up and down and screaming about how awful America is and how awful white people are and all the rest of the nonsense that we've heard from the usual sources, you have to accept the risk that sooner or later something may come out in this case that will make you look like a fool. There's nothing wrong with looking like a fool. You are free to look like a fool in America. But if you look like a fool often enough, people are going to start to believe, rightfully, that you're a fool. Mm. On Tell Mikey D, coming up at 9 o'clock, WMFO Medford, back with our favorite things from the past week and the strangest things from the past week, right after this.
If you're a single man under the age of 35, you'd probably like to know what the ladies are looking for on an online dating site. A guy who had a few drinks and later got pulled over for buzz driving. See, that could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. And doesn't a guy who's back living with his parents but calls them my roommates just scream, Mr. Right?
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we live in our dream.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We are wrapping things up here at The Big Picture with myself, Shay Spillane, and as always, Derek Gary. But before we go, we want to tell you what's hot, which is our favorite thing from the past or coming week. This isn't about Boston, but I'm hoping that... we already have this, but I hope that it's widespread. Baltimore just became one of the next cities to say that marijuana possession cases, regardless of quantity or a person's criminal record, will no longer be prosecuted. The state attorney announced this yesterday. In a statement released by her office, she said that her staff will stop prosecuting the cases because they have no public safety value, they disproportionately affect communities of color, and erode public trust.
Right on.
She also said that they are costly and a counterproductive use of limited resources. They still will prosecute for people with intent to distribute, but if it is their first offense, they will recommend counseling and other forms of, of deterrent motivation other than jail time. I read this and was just like, let's keep this going.
What they're really saying is our jails are full of opium offenders. all right. For you hardcore film nerds out there, you know I am a big giallo fan. This just came out yesterday. This is a 3-disc Blu-ray from Severin called All the Colors of Giallo. And what this 3-disc collection includes is...
All the Colors of Giallo.
4 hours of Giallo trailers and a brand new documentary called All the Colors of Giallo, featuring interviews with many of the top Giallo directors. That's on disc one. Disc two just gets into the German crimey films, and it's got German crimey... Giallo, it's got all the crimey trailers. So if you are into these genres, it's 5.5 hours of trailers.
Are they trying to play with, do a play on words that giallo means yellow in like four different languages?
No, that's what they're called. They're giallo films. They're Italian.
Because it means yellow.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, the whole genre.
I have no idea what
the subgenre is called giallo.
Giallo.
Yes.
Giallo.
But anyway.
Oh, shut up.
Bull Moose Records has it in stock. Please don't buy the last copy because I'm heading up there to get it in another week. So check
you just that. You shouldn't have told them.
Check it out. All the Colors Giallo.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We're about to leave you here at The Big Picture, but first we're going to tell you that's a thing that happened, which is the craziest story that we heard from last week. For me, I'm coming out of Utah on this one. I just thought it was funny because I hate this actress because I think she's got a stick way too far up there. A Utah man is suing Gwyneth Paltrow, alleging the actress injured him in a 2016 hit-and-run ski crash at Deer Valley Resort. Terry Anderson alleges in a lawsuit filed yesterday that on February 26, 2016, Paltrow was skiing, quote-unquote, out of control when she hit him from behind, knocking him down, landing on top of him, and causing him to suffer a concussion, brain injury, and 4 broken ribs. He claimed that after the collision, she got up, turned, and skied away, leaving him lying in the snow. The lawsuit also alleges that the ski instructor that was accompanying her on the slopes approached Sanderson without having seen the crash and falsely accused him of causing it. Sanderson is seeking damages in excess of $3.1 million.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Ohio. Don't get up there very much. Toxic masculinity or masculinity on toxins. A 15-year-old student at Liberty High School in Liberty Township took some LSD to get through the school day.
As one does.
That motivated him to get up and grab his teacher's breasts, prompting her to scream for help. The student,
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh at that. That's not funny.
The student ran off.
The
student ran off, but was caught by the school resource officer, who brought him back into the building, where he mumbled about big breasts. In the principal's office, the student then grabbed a secretary, pinning her against the wall and groping her breasts and buttocks. As the resource,
this is why we don't do LSD in school, kids.
As the resource officer tried to handcuff the student, he broke free and grabbed the principal's breasts. The student was taken to a nearby hospital where he claimed to be one of the Avengers and said he had been given the LSD by his dog.
Like I said, it is not funny to grope women. The funny part is that this kid, that was his reaction to LSD. He couldn't just be like, I see unicorns. It's just like, nope, I'm going to grope a bunch of people.
His vaping device has been confiscated. So, yeah, you thought the Tide Pods were bad, kids.
Right?
Just no.
I didn't even know kids still did LSD. Yeah. That's so old school.
Don't do dope, kids. It's bad. That is all the time we've got. Next week, we will be doing our annual Super Bowl ad recall. So pay attention to the ad.